Hey friends, welcome to the Raising Boys and Girls podcast. I'm Sissy Goff.
And I'm David Thomas.
And I'm Melissa Trevathan.
And we're so glad you joined us for this conversation. Let's dive in. David McGee is the best-selling author of the award-winning book, Dear William, a father's memoir of addiction, recovery, love, and loss, and a dozen other books. He has been featured on CBS Mornings and is a sought-after speaker in schools, universities, and companies nationwide. He helped inspire and create the William McGee Institute for Student Well-Being at the University of Mississippi, as well as the William McGee Center for Wellness Education. David has been a daily newspaper publisher, a media company president, an award-winning columnist for newspapers and Newsweek, a small business owner, a regular guest on CNBC, and once hosted a national cable TV and radio program, The David McGee Show. David and his wife, Kent, live in Oxford, Mississippi. We are honored he would join us in Nashville for a thoughtful conversation around an incredibly important topic. We'd encourage you to share this conversation as we believe it could offer a lot of help and hope. David, it is so much fun to be sitting in the room with you. We spoke at an event in Oxford, Mississippi, and the host of that event gave us a gift basket that had a signed copy of your book. And I had already heard from two different sources how amazing that book was. Mm. Had it in my head, like, I've got to get a copy of that book. And there it was. Mm. And I've told you this before. It's so fun to say this again, that I read it in less than 48 hours. Like, I couldn't stop reading it. Your story was so compelling and so honest, so generous. And I texted Sissy and was like, we have got to have him on the podcast even had a chance to start to read the book.
Totally.
And it is so fun that that thought is full circle now that we're sitting in the room with you, getting to have this opportunity. So will you start just by telling us a little bit about your story, your family, and how you found your way to the work you're doing?
I will, and thank you so much. And David and Sissy, I have to be honest. I'll tell you about myself, but first I have to say, I really feel the same way about you guys. Mm. Because I've been so blessed in recent years to get to speak at a lot of schools and to a lot of parents' groups about their students' well-being and the health and mental health state in particular of their children and their whether they have their joy or not. And you guys come up all the time. And I tell you that just because it's hard, I know family, profession, and I know you're energized and rewarded by it, but you do have, I feel like I'm at ground zero of what I would call this movement in the let's work on nurturing our children. Let's put our focus on them because it's so important to them and to our families. And I think this yellow house, like my daughter, Mary Hallie, who has three children now, she tells me, I mean, a new episode of the podcast comes out. She's stopping, dropping everything and listening.
That's
and I
sweet.
Told her, I'm coming to the yellow house. It was like I was going on Taylor Swift's bus or something.
Wow, we've never gotten that comparison. That's
saying,
a great
the
one.
Highest of compliments.
Wow.
So thank you.
Oh, thank you, David.
You're so
That's
kind.
Really kind.
You know, for me, well, I grew up in a yellow house.
Mm.
And it, you know, I was an adopted child and put into a family of a patchwork, which is beautiful. I'm a big proponent of adoption. It's one of the most beautiful things in this world. Doesn't mean something doesn't happen in that change and transfer. And so for me, I ended up in what was a pretty, at times, dark and complicated household. You know, in an era, I mean, I think we had one psychologist in our entire community of Oxford, Mississippi when I was a child. And we could count on one hand the number of children that went to them. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like you wore a scarlet letter. And so we were like, well, I'm not going.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not going. You know, it was a different era. And both in accessibility and the stigma was even bigger then. And so I didn't mean to carry a lot of that with me, but I did. And I just had hopes and dreams, though, of everybody else. I thought I could be a man and puff my chest up and say I was fine, and that would be the way it was. So when I met this precious young lady, my first day of classes at Ole Miss, she was wearing a one-piece Bugs Bunny swimsuit at a fraternity party at my fraternity on the Ole Miss campus. And I was like, I remember punching a friend, that's my girl. Mm. And we just had this big American dream. We would have a family. We would work not unlike most, you know, parents or couples when they get married. We wanted our children to have it better than we had it. Mm. And I meant it. And I worked at it. I mean, I'm thinking I'm going to become Father of the Year. I'm teaching young adult Sunday school class. Maybe thinking I get extra points if I write my own lesson. Mm. I'm coaching youth, most every youth sports team my children play. But a lot of that stuff that I had tried to swallow down and puff my chest up as a man and father and say, I'm fine. You know, we reached a crisis in life where something happened. I'm mired in infidelity. I'm numbing with alcohol. I end up misusing a prescription of Adderall. My two oldest children, we had three, my sons. And on paper, they had everything. But I mean, they are self-medicating, following my trail. And here comes our daughter, the caboose, Mary Hallie. And she's like, you know, I'm not going to be like my dad self-medicating and my brothers. But yet it was like water in a balloon. It just gets squeezed and goes somewhere else. And she ends up mired in an eating disorder. So we're getting divorced. Our sons are just, even though on paper, again, making A's or some way, was in the honors college, running track. But our whole family, that dream was crumbling. We'd lost it all. And, you know, out of that, I'll spare a lot of the details, but, you know, as things started falling apart on me and I did lose my marriage, I just decided that I needed to really think about what I wanted and I needed to fight for it. And so I did, and I was able to get my marriage back. I was able to turn my life around, but then there's still some resulting. You know, it's not like you can flip a light switch in our children. So the long story in short is we suffered some real damage. You know, we lost our son, William, to an accidental drug overdose. Nearly lost our son, Hudson, to an accidental drug overdose. And then our daughter had to do a lot of work to get out of, you know, where she was. But we did. We did the work. Doubling back on faith, realizing the value of counseling, uniting together. And so I ended up doing this work. And I, you know, I'm blessed to get to speak at schools a lot. I'm just a layperson in this work. We created some, you know, a center at Ole Miss to help students. We literally just got a calling. I did, and I think to some degree my whole family did. And I'll just wrap that up by saying, you know, there's a thing, like I used to say, well, I was called to this work. It's the last thing I thought I'd ever do. And I've adjusted that now and say, the reality is I crawled to this work, you know? So that's how I got here.
So grateful for your willingness to share such hard, vulnerable experiences. And curious how your wife and daughters responded, or your wife and kids responded to such an honest account of all of it.
Yeah.
When you started talking.
So, you know, they got to know me in a different way. Mm. I think in a lot of ways, my son Hudson, you know, after we lost William, and my son Hudson is fighting for his sobriety, and he allows me to speak of that, by the way. The same with my daughter about her eating disorder battle. You know, by then they're college age after we lost William, and my wife and I are rebuilding our marriage, and I'm trying to learn life as a sober man. I'm trying to learn life as an honest man, frankly. And I look back on it, and I think my son Hudson and my daughter and I, we kind of grew up together. I thought I was a man before. But, you know, I think when you swallow a lot and you're not developing your resilience, a lot of that growth stops. So it was really a special time. Suddenly they're seeing me as this vulnerable father, and it was a new father. It was a new version. And I could feel a level of respect from them that honestly I'd not seen before. And, but really it opened the door to us being able to kind of grow up together and have more honest conversations. And I like to say my children today, Hudson and Mary Hallie, my adult children, have children of their own now. I mean, they kind of emerged out of that as my role models.
Mm. It's so cool.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
That is beautiful.
What a gift to them to have you mm-hmm. in that way.
So, David, part of why I even wrote my last book is because adult men lead the stats for infidelity, internet pornography, substance abuse, and suicide. And the common denominator in those four being a male's attempt to try to numb out or shut down whatever it is that they're feeling that we can't, to all the wisdom in the recovery movement, you know, deal with life on life's terms. And I loved your TED talk. And I so appreciated when you said, I want to read this. I love this line of just, I'm running away from myself. And I think screens and substances are the two most convenient ways that I think boys and adolescent males can run away from themselves. And I would love to just ask you, what would you say to parents who have maybe adopted a mindset of kids are just going to experiment or all college kids are going to drink at some point? What would you say to that?
Yeah, I get that one a lot. I'm going to be honest.
I bet.
You know, the work I get to do on a college campus and get around to others and in high schools as well. And I tell parents, don't fall for that.
Good.
You know, number one, we know one of the gateway successes to helping young people find and keep later in life the joy they want and deserve, when it comes to substances, one of the key gateways to that is delay, delay, delay. I tell parents, if there's one thing you can do, look, don't let your children know whatever choices they make when they're adults is fine. But don't give in to the fact that the data, the research is clear that the longer, the more they can keep a clear mind. And that comes down to less screen time. Let's be honest. That is addictive as well. You know, where the average junior in high school in America today is spending 9.5 hours on that device.
Right.
And I'll tell that to a high school group of students sitting out there and they're all rolling, laughing like, only 9.5? How's that? You know, but I tell parents the studies are clear. Their involvement is needed in their child's life, and their children aren't old enough to drink and or use substances. And why would you possibly give in when the studies show when you do, it is harmful? You have to keep that fight. Now, what I will say to parents is this. Take my advice. I learned the hard way. You can't punish them out of it.
Mm.
I wish you could. I wish it worked. I tried. It didn't work. You know, it takes counseling. Used to be back in the day, we believed, and maybe it was more so, that youth will misuse substances for peer pressure. Now, it really is purely more self-medication attempts. And so that's my message to parents is take that to heart. I should have, when I caught my son, William, using alcohol and marijuana in the 9th grade, instead of repeatedly trying to ground him, which did not work, he needed counseling. I needed to look into his heart and hear him. I needed to see him and hear them, that he was numbing something, that he was reaching out for something. So that's my advice to parents is remember they need you.
Yeah.
And look, sometimes you have to have, obviously there has to be rules. And sometimes those rules are very, very beneficial to help you understand with substance misuse, can they stay within the boundary set? And when they can't, it's not that they're bad. It's that they have a problem that needs dealt with and perhaps a sickness, an illness, you know?
Yeah.
Well, along those lines, what encouragement or challenge? You offered some great challenge to parents of who were already concerned of going ahead and pursuing counseling because of it being a numbing act. So thinking preventatively.
Yep.
Middle school, high school, maybe before kids are there, what encouragement or challenges would you give?
Yeah.
Parents in that
way. Well, that's such a great question, Sissy. You know, it's important for parents to remember I have just been so blessed. Again, I came to this work as a layperson, really. And it's kind of, I look back over the last few years to think of thousands of even middle school students and high school students and college students I've been so blessed to engage with. And mostly I've just tried to, you know, really listen to them. And what I hear from them is not altogether different from how I felt when I remember reaching puberty. And I, you know, I had a microbiologist father in my adopted home. And, you know, I think he did a pretty good job where maybe others struggled of helping me understand physical changes that might take place. Mm-hmm. I might grow hair here. I would grow taller. Other changes. I was not caught off guard by any of those. I think where I was caught off guard, and what I hear from a lot of young people today in the middle school age, they're caught off guard and unprepared for the mental changes that take place, because your body is, as we know, hormones, there's a lot going on physically that literally your mind has different thoughts, it has different, and it's complicated. And for parents, it's very important. What I tell parents in that preparatory time is you're nearing middle school puberty, and then when you're there, it is so vital to see and hear your children. You have to be alongside them, not as their friend, but as somebody, as a mentor, and in a role of where they really understand that you see them, that you hear them, because they will have strange and unusual feelings that they're uncomfortable with, that they don't understand. And when you see them and hear them, you, instead of just trying to remind them, I know what you're going through. Well, you really don't, because that was you and this is them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once they see that they're seen and heard, it unlocks a relationship of greater trust that gives yourself a lot better odds within the family of being able to help them and be alongside them.
Mm. Thank you.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with the King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Yes, for the samples, because seasonal allergies are no joke in the state of Tennessee.
Or Kentucky, where I spend the summers at Hopetown. I spend most of the summer outdoors and could not function without allergy relief.
Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
You just described my exact state in waking up, minus the need for coffee.
I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for years, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can be outside with the kids at camp without my eyes watering like a fountain, and I can speak without feeling like a frog has jumped into my throat.
But at Hopetown, a frog could jump into your boat or your bed, and Claritin can't really help with that.
That's true, but they've got allergies covered. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear.
Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription.
Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear.
Use as directed.
Building on challenge and encouragement, you have created this extraordinary life-saving initiative at Ole Miss that is named after your remarkable son. Mm-hmm. And will you just talk about that initiative, what you hope it will accomplish, and I even want to ask you, how could this end up on every college and university campus across the globe? Because
Amen.
It feels so needed and necessary.
Let's go do that.
I want that so much. Will you talk about it?
You know, David, I crazier things have happened.
Yes.
Crazier things have happened. We are at a moment in this country with every state getting opioid resources. And we are at a moment where I think that if we kind of put down the silos and unite and think that we really do need to make sure resources like that are geared toward abatement, that they're not just wasted. And so that's actually not the craziest dream. I'll remember I heard that here first.
Let's keep dreaming it.
And so, you know, for us, it was also a dream. People will say to me, that's so nice how you honored your son, William. And I say, look, I can't get our son back. But I guarantee you, there's a lot of other souls we can keep on this earth until it's time. And so, but it's also, it is a matter of life and death, like it was with our late son, William, and too many others I buried. But also, it's a matter of what I call the walking dead, because I deal with too many of all ages, but I, in particular, get to engage with a lot of young people who still have a beating heart and are still drawing in breath, but substances and or severe mental health crisis has stolen their joy, and they're pretending like they're showing up and punching some clocks to say, show they're okay, but they're not. And so really for us, we felt like we have to do this differently. Like, I, you know, I grew up in the era you just had student health services, what we'd call the infirmary. But we know that the whole body and the whole being, you know, needs more than that. And sure, sometimes you need a flu shot, but sometimes you need some talk therapy. And yes. And sometimes you need some body to help in reflection of why are you self-medicating? And to help you understand how it's helped you enlighten yourself to how the behaviors, while in the short term moment may make you forget the pain, they are causing infinitely more pain. Yeah. So we thought, you know, let's have a place on a university campus that provides that level of support that doesn't, you can't get in trouble. It doesn't go in your record. That we can work both in the education level at a different way, but also provide a safe haven so that students, you know, can reach out, or even if they think a friend needs help. And I'll tell you, for me, you know, for a number of years, you know, we just worked like our hair was on fire because we were called to do this. And there's been more, but I'll just use one example. How you know, like, okay, this works. I remember I get a knock at my door at the house one day, a couple of years ago, and there's this young man there. And I remembered he was in real crisis. Mm-hmm. I didn't honestly know if he would make it. And he's knocking on my door and, you know, I'm in there. I was trying to work on something. And I'm like, who's at the door? You know, and I get to the door and it's him. And he's holding this present. And he's like, you know, it's a small gift for saving my life, but I don't know what else to give you.
Oh, David.
You know, and I don't pat myself on the back for that. It took a lot of people at the McGee Center at Ole Miss campus. But what I'm here to tell you is I pat him on the back because he did the hard work.
Yeah. Yes.
And he was enough of a gentleman to come thank me. Well, he's a senior now. Wow. And I get to see him. He's so involved on campus. I mean, he's this ray of light. And I'll be at like a function and he'll be working there like as a student ambassador or something. And he'll come tap me on the shoulder. Hey, Mr. McGee. And he's smiling ear to ear. And there's other examples of that. But
wow.
That's why we did it. And so you think across this country where we're burying too many and we have too many in what I call the walking dead. But here's the thing. We actually know we know what to do.
Yes.
The work you do here at Daystar, the work so many others around this country are doing. There's not a big secret to the ingredients that go into human joy. This is not a secret. Mm. We need to make, you know, counseling more fully accessible to all people throughout the country. We need more McGee centers. I'm going to go with that, or whatever name they need. It doesn't have to be. We're not doing this for us. I'll take 1,000 different names. Yeah. So I appreciate that question so much, because we do know what to do.
Yeah.
And we do know how to reach people. You're doing it right here. You know, we need yellow houses everywhere. Mm. We need yellow houses in every community.
Mm. Well, you all are doing a remarkable job. Yes. I mean, we could talk all day long about this initiative and how much we love it. And there are two parts of it we would love for you to describe in particular.
Yeah.
One is the manual resource, resource for young men, and also the 9 dimensions of wellness, which we've like could be an amazing tool for all families to just use in daily rhythm.
Yes. Okay, great question. So we'll start with manual. This gentleman I know, Matthew Stefanko, part of the, one of the things I've tried to do is, I'm just a lay person that comes to this. So, and I think all of us have to do that. You do it with this podcast. I have to just open my ears and learn from others. You know, and so I've when I get around the country, I really try to pay attention to what other schools are doing or what initiatives are working. And Matthew, when I met him, he was working at a nonprofit called Shatterproof that is really working to stop overdose deaths. And you know, he was called to go launch something for young men in particular. So that was manual, and he was sharing his vision. He's like, you know, I've read your story, and I know that you probably share my vision that young men, they don't have often the tools that they need to really learn about themselves in a way that they will engage with.
Yes.
Maybe that information's out there, but they're not going there, right? And they're doing a lot of the, I'm fine, like I did. So they launch manual, and he's like nowhere, meaning like you launch anything. And he needed a university to take a chance. So we brought him in and had a lot of meetings, you can imagine, at a university level. And we've had great leadership, a lady by the name of Dr. Natasha Jeter, who leads assistant vice chancellor, leads a lot of our wellness initiatives, and our director of the McGee Center. They're like, we need to do this.
Mm.
And so what it is, and so we sign him up, and then we expose him to our students so that they manual could go sign up young men. And here's what they do. So let's say, and they signed up a lot of young men at Ole Miss first, initially. We were number one. And so they maintain, like, first of all, messaging and accessibility ways that they know they will respond to. So they use text messaging. And it's proven in research to be more accessible to them, and they'll respond to it. And so they have, through this text messaging, the ability to connect with coaching peers who have had a little training, who can answer questions they may have of things they're facing or point them in a different direction. They also have Sissy, like they, manual has, I'll say 25 hours of videos developed at this point already on issues around mental health. It could be sexual health. It could be financial health. Also mental health, inadequacy. Mm-hmm. And these videos, they're highly produced. I would call them in like the masterclass genre.
Mm-hmm.
And so these young men, you know, have access to this. And then there's community dialogue through their messaging techniques and that kind of thing. So now Manuel is really, now they're in lots of universities and growing fast. And, we're beginning to hope with some of the high school relationships that I have now, we're beginning to look at, okay, what's the 2.0 also in getting it into some high schools. And I think I'm sure we'll all agree, more resources like that are at fingertips of young men or young women, but in this case, manual is for young men, will be beneficial.
Yes.
You know? And so then the other part of the question, the 9, nine dimensions of well-being. Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Okay. So at the McGee Center, I'm so proud of them. Like, they just really understand the value of we have a tendency. So I'll back up. We have a tendency, I think, when we deal, let's take alcohol and other drugs, education. We have a tendency a lot of times to hit that on such a top line. Don't do this. That doesn't work. I wish it did. We'd just say it and be done and move on.
Yeah. Yes.
So, but we have that tendency. We keep going back to that tendency. When we developed the McGee Center, they like some other universities doing this work, realize these nine dimensions of well-being, look, it takes all. It's like a CEO of a Ford Motor Company told me once, to build a great car, it's not just design. It's not just a factory running right. It's all of it. Yeah. And so it requires the social element, because we can't do this life well without others. It requires, the cultural level. It requires even some financial awareness. It requires all the things that can either roll up into how we feel good about ourselves, or if they work against us, how we don't.
Mm.
And it requires the healthy body. And these nine dimensions are so critical. So that's a backbone of the work at the McGee Center. And I agree with you. That absolutely can and should be. As we start, because I do get it, I've said it several times, and I know I'm a broken record on this, but I have been blessed that schools, you know, I'll be up in Baltimore, and they'll give me the whole student body, and then I get the parents group, and we're having 300 and 400 show up.
Wow.
Right.
That's, you know, great. And then they're like, well, what can we do? What does it leave behind? The schools in particular, because they're feeling a lot of pressure.
Mm.
Things have changed on these schools fast.
Yeah.
And they're a little overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And this type of work, look, we've learned that algebra needs to be taught earlier, and we pushed it in the middle schools. The nine dimensions of well-being, I think, is where we are now in really needing to take that step. So I appreciate your recognition of that.
Yeah, we love it.
We have a lot of educators and administrators who listen to our podcast, and I hope they're all on your website right now at this moment in the conversation thinking about just bringing your wise voice in to talk on these important topics. And so thinking about the story you've lived and how it's led to the work you're doing, just would love to ask, how have you seen loss change your family?
You'll make me cry, I guess. Oh, wow. Loss gave us everything. And that's so hard to say, because we miss our son William, our firstborn child, so much. I couldn't even put it into words. But the loss, what we gained over the resilience and the healing in that process, honestly gives me a great appreciation of Easter. And I just didn't understand that before. That there is rebirth, and rebirth is possible. And you know, we miss him, but he's still with us. And I think that if we allow our loved ones, our dearly departed loved ones, to be with us, they can be, and they will be. It's different. It's different. I still have conversations with my William. I was with him the week before he died, and he was encouraging me to do this work. And I didn't even understand. He was telling me to write my book, Dear William. It didn't have a name. But he told me, go write that book. That's the last words he said. Go write your book. Didn't even have a name. So much of my story at that time, I didn't really even know fully what it was. And, you know, he's like, I want to help people one day. That's his last conversation I had. It actually took place here in Nashville, where you're based. And then the next week I found him dead. And so, you know, but we have conversations, and he's still with me. It's just different. Our family, I'll be honest. A lot of my friends, you know, my wife and I had gotten remarried. We'd saved our marriage. I'd rebuilt my career. We'd overcome. My daughter had found some, was finding some success in eating disorder recovery. Our son Hudson, before William, was found essentially dead on the Ole Miss campus from an accidental drug overdose. They told us he wasn't going to make it. I was counting the days to pull the plug, but he did. He woke up. He found recovery. And by the way, he's still more than a decade sober and a father or two and my role model and the most beautiful story. And so, you know, when William died, a lot of my friends tell me now they thought, oh, they'd come so far, but this is the last straw. I'm not sure they'll make it. And I understand that. I think the odds were stacked against us, but it went the other way. We got stronger. We decided to throw down the gauntlet that we will not be defeated by this. Mm. So in loss, and I love that question, and I appreciate you having the courage to ask me that. Mm. And I'm just going to try to be bold enough to wrap up my answer and say, in great loss, we have found incredible joy.
Mm. Well, that leads exactly to my next question for you, because you once said, I found lasting joy, durable enough even to navigate life's most difficult circumstances, like losing a child. Will you talk about that joy?
Yeah. You know, I think that's what real joy is. Mm. And that's the whole promise of faith. It's hard. It's hard to even in our hardest moments, it's fair to ask questions and it's right to ask questions. But I think when we really tap into joy, which is God's grace, where we've earned that joy through resilience, you know, I think that's one of the greatest gifts of faith. That's one of the greatest gifts of prayer, is that it can give us resilience. And in that resilience, it's like carving, taking little carvings out of a stone, that where you're making a statue that's strong enough ultimately to withstand the storm, you know? And I used to get ruffled by the smallest things. Mm. I would think I had a crisis over this or that, and I didn't. And when I found joy, again, this is dangerous to try to phrase this way, because I've never known any grief like the day William died, and I've still not. It lingers. It lingers. It will linger with me, with us. But the day he died wasn't the worst moment of my family's life, because we were in a stronger position and I really could understand through faith that William would be okay and we would be okay. And we sobbed and every day for a year and years. And you've heard me cry how many times today, but that's what joy is. It's that even on the worst day, you're okay. Mm. You're okay. And a lot of that comes to being willing to engage with others. Sometimes when you don't feel like it, a lot of that comes from remembering your nine dimensions of well-being. When you know that you'd rather stay in bed, but you know you need to wake up and take another step.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. This season of our podcast, we've been talking about the ages and stages of development and different things that go on for kids in different moments, having really rich conversations with parents about what they've learned through those stages, and would love to ask you, just what would you say is some of the best parenting advice you've ever been given?
Great question. And for a change, I'll give you a short answer, because I want parents to hear what I'm going to say. I have two things. One, speak with your children more often in open-ended questions.
Great.
Yes.
Allow them to give answers that they don't even know they hold. Allow them to give answers that you don't know. Remind yourself, put that up on the refrigerator. Speak to your children in open-ended questions consistently. And eventually you will hear them, and they will hear themselves. Another is, for me, nobody gave me this advice. I learned this the hard way. but I know it's right. Give your children less in things and more in love.
Mm.
And I don't mean to put you in a guilt trip if you think, oh, well, I just bought this trip to Europe or whatever. And we did that. And fine. I'm not. We all know everybody has, each home is different in each. But I think it's a principle that if you really keep close to your heart, they don't need your things. They need your love. And the studies are very clear. The things actually do them not always good. The love always does exceptional good.
Amen.
Well, as David mentioned, the folks who are trying to get on your website and find you, will you tell them where they can? Because I'm certain a lot of people are.
Oh, thank you so much. So you can find more about me at daviddmcgee, that's M-A-G-E-E.com, David D. McGee. But I'll tell you one thing. If even more than learn about me. So when I would get speaking in schools, my book, Dear William, is a literary memoir about our story. But I had a lot of people at schools ask me, so I put together my schools talk, and it's in a paperback book called Things Have Changed, What Every Parent and Educator Should Know About the Student Substance Misuse and Mental Health Crisis. Mm. And it's a guidebook about research-based, and then about everything anecdotally that I learned from students in working with them. And so, look, I don't personally care if I sell another book. I'm good. I do find that resources like that for people like your resources are so incredible. You know, I would say that's even more valuable than anything else. Things Have Changed is the book. And look, if you get it, I don't need you to buy another one. Read it, but pass it on to somebody else.
Mm.
Well, I do care if you sell another book, because I want people to read Dear William, because I believe they'll have an experience akin to the one that I had. And you have a new book coming out. Will you talk about that new book real quick?
I do. So I haven't even told anybody this yet, but like literally we got contracts to get through yet, but Dear William is going to be a movie, it does appear. And in Hollywood circles, you don't say those kind of things until it's really far down the line, because they'll even make a movie and throw it away before it comes out. But it's happening. Thank you. It's just, you know, and I have the sequel coming out in September called A Little Crazy.
Mm.
And it is about the underlying issues. ADHD, depression, anxiety, a lot of the things that I've faced that a lot of people face, that 25% probably of the populace in the U.S. faces, the many mild mental health issues which we need to learn how to navigate with, but also if we don't, can rise up and be major ones.
Yes.
And it's in the same voice as Dear William, and a lot of it is based in that period of Dear William. So it's called A Little Crazy. And my agent said, well, you got the title right. I don't know, because that's what a lot of us feel, you know?
Yeah.
And so we'll see from there. But thank you for asking. It's more just kind of in that vulnerable father and trying to make sense, you know. And I write a lot about childhood. I mean, I'm a writer. I don't use a ghostwriter. I failed 10th grade English.
Mm.
And it's because so much dark was going on in my life that I channeled that through being distracted, as you talked about earlier. And so I think there's a lot that parents and students will be able to relate to. So thank you for asking.
Can't wait for that.
No.
Thanks.
Okay, we end every interview, we move from the substantive to the silly.
Something
food related, and would love to ask you a two-part question. Part one is queso or guac. Part two is what's your favorite taco?
Okay, I'm queso and guac.
Great answer. We did that for lunch today.
Yes, we did.
Okay. And my wife would say that I need to not be so messy with it, because after all these years, I still tend to try to work them both at the same time and leave a stream of cheese on my shirt and pants. and my wife, her name is Kent, and she's like, seriously, still? Mm. And I'm like, seriously. So
you have heard remarkable things about Kent.
Tell her
we want to meet her one of these days.
Oh, I will. Wow. Yeah, we'd need about 6 more hours for that. What a rock. She saved our family. She took me back when people said, kick that man to the curb. Mm. And for good reason. That's fair. I don't mind. I don't blame them for saying that. So we eat a lot of cheese and guac and celebrate these days. And so favorite taco. Listen, today in Nashville, Tennessee. Mas Tacos, por favor.
Ooh, yes.
Yes.
And I've only eaten one in once, but I can tell you the best taco I have ever eaten, and I will eat more, was there, and it was quinoa and sweet potato.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
I had that one. Wow. It's amazing.
Amazing, David.
And you wouldn't think it from those ingredients.
You would not. Wow. I thought, am I making a risky order? And then, wow, was I paid off for that? Like, that line is always long there, I'm told.
It is.
I don't want to make it any longer for everybody, but wow.
It's a great recommendation.
It is a great recommendation.
For our local beloved place. Mm-hmm. Well, we'd love to share that taco with you in that line someday.
Deal.
On a future trip back to Nashville.
Yes. We're just
honored you came here and shared this conversation with us.
Thank you
for doing
this.
Thank you. Thank you all so much. And I just appreciate the work you were doing. And look, I'm honored to be here. And I can't wait to call my daughter and say, guess who I was just with? In the yellow house.
Tell her we said hi.
I will.
Please do.
Okay.
If you are enjoying the Raising Boys and Girls podcast, click follow on your podcast listening app to subscribe and not miss an episode.
Join us next time for another episode where we'll bring you help and hope on your journey of raising boys and girls.